Linda Szymanski is the Senior Programming Director of Programming PBS Kids. She was involved in setting up the programming of Nicktoons, helped in creating Cartoon Networks, and was the head of development, which contributed to the creation of iconic animated properties, which you all would identify with: Rugrats, Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Laboratory, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and on, there are umpteen properties that she's been associated with.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I would just like to say I am extremely honored to be here today. There aren't that many conferences that I go to where I include sitar as part of my bio, because most times I think that people aren't that interested in that, but today I feel proud to admit that I did spend most of my college days practicing sitar and not studying, so I'm happy to be here, honored to be invited, so thank you, Elizabeth. What I'll be talking about today is the state of children's programming and the future of children's programming. So I'll be talking a lot about PBS, where I work, but what I'm talking about actually applies in a lot of cases to what other networks are doing as well. So as Elizabeth mentioned, I do head up children's programming at PBS. Our goal there is to make programming that is both educational and entertaining for kids 2 to 5, and now also for kids 6 to 8. We're constantly changing what our big vision is, and we recently added something called the PBS Kids Go block that runs in the afternoon, and that is educational programming for kids 6 to 8. We've decided to reinvent ourselves a couple of times, and most recently, we've been working on something that we call the PBS Kids Next Generation. And part of the reason that we are reinventing ourselves is because we realized that American kids were losing their edge, their competitive edge in the global marketplace. So we've been focusing over the last few years on developing shows that focus on math, science, and literacy. And the next set of shows that will premiere are all science shows. The group after that will be literacy shows, and then math shows. This strategy that we crafted about a year ago was mostly about content and multi-platform strategies for shows. First, making them more educational and more entertaining, but also figuring out how to make these shows available on all different platforms 24/7. Now, when I started in kids' television, there was Saturday morning TV, there was syndication, there was Nick, there was Disney Channel, which was pay, and there was PBS. And basically, you programmed for kids 2 to 11 as a group, and shows were on when we put them on, and if you didn't see them then, you missed them, and you could watch them some other time, but that was it. Now, obviously, as time went on, cable changed that approach to kids programming radically, simply by offering so many more channels and focusing on channels for kids. In general, around the mid-80s, you saw a flurry of channels come along that were targeted to specific tastes or specific age groups or specific interests. And kids was certainly one of those. So the next change that came along was, of course, the internet. And that changed everything radically by basically offering not just an alternative to viewing, but sort of a way to develop kids' programming into something that you could then go and look at or do when you were done with the television screen. Now, of course, the industry has changed radically since then. What you see now is digital cable, which has given us so many viewing options. There are probably about 15 different options for kids on digital cable. And even just this past week, a new joint venture was mentioned. Basically, a combination of a bunch of production companies have come up with a new channel for kids. The whole theme behind it was that they wouldn't be advertising junk food on it. So the other thing that came up this past week was a very controversial DirecTV channel for babies to view. So that's a huge controversial issue in the kids industry right now. Of course, now there's video on demand, which companies like Comcast see as the future. One of the more interesting things about working in kids' television now is that the competition is not so much the other channels, but a whole list of other platforms, DVRs, DVDs, the internet, video games, podcasting, music downloads. Video games are our biggest competition, and all of these others are our competition as well. Another big change is that, you know, earlier I mentioned kids' television was for kids 2 to 11. Now, of course, that's changed radically. It went from that to being for kids 2 to 5 and 6 to 11. And now we at PBS are targeting even further, really based on kids' stages. And I think a lot of the other networks are starting to think about that as well. So you'll see programming for kids 2 to 3, 3 to 5, 6 to 8, 9 to 12. That's going to change things radically as time goes on. It's so much more targeted than it used to be. Now, 20 years ago, kids that were watching TV were a lot like those of us who worked in programming. Right now, kids are radically different than even people in their early 20s that you know, were watching TV. They watch TV completely differently. They watch what they want, when they want. They have DVRs. They don't care what programmers say is on. They just know what they feel like watching. They are equally interested in all the other platforms that are out there. They have access to so much more information, and they understand how shows are made. They can look at a show on Nick, and they can tell you why it's different than a show on Cartoon Network or the Disney Channel. They can explain what color styling is. They have grown up watching movies that are animated but look completely realistic, like Toy Story. So they are very, very, very sophisticated. They're used to interactive shows. Kids that are 2 to 5 are watching shows like Blue's Clues and Dora, where they're interacting with the TV. Another change for us in the industry is that production has changed so much, animation in particular. It used to be that animation was so expensive and time-consuming that only some shows got made in animation. But now they can be done in Flash, and they can be done in enormous volume so that they can be much cheaper. Most TV right now is 2D, but what you're going to see as companies figure out how to do 3D for TV, you're going to see that's going to change radically. And of course, a change that many of you might find interesting is that there's been the introduction of India into the global animation industry, and everyone in the States is very interested in this change. Suddenly there's a way to do 3D animation so much more cheaply than there used to be. So those are some of the biggest changes that we're witnessing. We're also witnessing a change in how networks and production companies think of programming. It used to be just the show. Content was the show. Now content is the show and its interactivity, the website, the video game, the licensed merchandise, the ringtones, the modular versions that are cut up and fed out on cell phones or put on the web for downloads, downloaded from iTunes, podcasted. That's the show. It used to be that I would get a pitch for a show, and basically people would tell me, these are the characters, this is the big idea for the show, here are some storylines. Well, now that's not enough. Now when I get the pitch, it's all those things plus a few pages, here's what the website could be like. And then several pages about the multi-platform approach to this show, what the podcasts could be, what all these other things can be. This is a huge change for us, and honestly, it's only come up in the past year and a half. Another big change, parents are much more engaged than they used to be in what their kids are watching. They want their kids to be learning from television. They're much more interested in shows that are educational, but they want them to be as good as any other shows. They want their kids to be learning all the time. They're more than happy to put a DVD player in the car so that kids will sit quietly in the car and watch. They're certainly you know, buying handhelds for them, and I think they're waiting for the handhelds to come along where the kids can watch shows. And I'll talk a little bit more about that after. But one thing I find interesting is that people are constantly pitching cell phone content, and they're always saying, well, you know, it's for kids in the supermarket, because you put them in you know, put them in their shopping cart, or they're waiting online, And this way you can just hand them the phone, they can watch something while they're waiting, and they won't complain, they won't try to buy things, they won't ask for gum. So it's been very interesting to see how parents have so immediately incorporated this very new technology into daily life, and they're pitching it that way. So how are networks approaching these enormous changes? Well, branding is one way. Branding, of course, is the way that each network differentiates itself from the other networks. But what they're doing is they're looking not just at the shows, but the time between the shows, those little breaks around the commercials, or in the case of PBS or Noggin, just in between the shows. They're figuring out how to use those little interstitials to teach things, to not just to promote other shows, but to really create the feel of the network. They're using every second for branding. There's just no wasted time at all. Networks are trying to figure out how to be more competitive, create the seamless environment for shows into interstitials, into commercials if they run them, into more interstitials. There's no filler anymore. Every minute must be completely meaningful, and the kids must stay engaged. They've got so many choices, they can easily leave your network and go to another place. So there's a lot of emphasis on what runs between the shows. Those spaces are as important as the shows. And moving into the future, networks are, of course, thinking about all these new platforms that I've mentioned, figuring out how to extend their brand using all of these new platforms. And most of all, figuring out what is coming. They've identified those ones that I've mentioned, and they understand how to use those. But everyone's waiting to see what comes next. Everyone's a lot more experimental than they used to be. They're willing to try out all these new platforms just to see what'll stick. So it's a very interesting time for that. But even more interestingly, the alliances that used to be just with universities and toy companies are now with technology companies. PBS, for example, recently convened a board of advisors meeting for our next generation. And so while many of these people that came to this board had backgrounds in education, the majority of people that were on this board came from technology companies. And we were looking to them to help guide us into what technology was going to be important in the future. So I think the next steps that you're going to see are alliances and bigger deals and more important deals between these production companies, these networks, and technology companies. They're really, in my opinion, symbiotic relationships. You have people developing the technology, you have people developing the content, and for the first time ever, they're getting together at the very earliest stages and saying, how can we work together? What can we do for each other? What you're going to see is that what we used to just think of as the show, and then everything else that promoted the show, will now all be part of the show. The downloads, what you see on the cell phones, all part of the show, all part of content. And that's a huge change.